supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Brad Linder, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. The state of New Jersey is getting rid of cash bail in the new year. That means people no longer have to put up money to stay out of jail while awaiting trial. People accused of low-level crimes will either be held in jail or released for free. It's a welcome change for many people, but not for bail bondsmen. WHYY's Joe Hernandez talked to a few of them.
Ron Olzawi has been writing bail bonds for 45 years, and he loves it.
It's like going to adult Disneyland every day.
Olzawi works in Clifton in North Jersey, and he's had his share of high-profile clients over the years. The most famous might be 17-year-old Amy Fisher, who was dubbed the Long Island Lolita after shooting her boyfriend, body shop owner Joey Buttafuoco's wife in 1992.
She had a $2 million bond. We wrote that.
Olzawi is not happy that New Jersey is getting rid of cash bail. That's no surprise. About 80% of his business is bail bonds. But he says it's more than self-interest. It's bad policy.
People forget you're dealing with people that have been in jail, they've been in prison, and they're there for a reason. They broke the law, and a lot of them are habitual. They're going to continue to break the law because that's the only lifestyle they know. They don't have any other skills.
Here's how next year's reforms will hurt bondsmen like Olzawi. In the past, if you got arrested, you might be able to get out of jail on bail. But let's say the bail was $2,000 and you couldn't afford it. You'd go to a bail bondsman for a loan. The bondsman would post your bail, and once you're released, you'd pay them back in installments with interest. Next year, cash bail goes away in favor of letting judges decide whether to hold defendants or release them for free. They'll make those decisions based in part on a computer algorithm that tries to predict whether a defendant will commit another crime or skip court. And this new system basically cuts out bail bondsmen. New Jersey Supreme Court Chief Justice Stuart Rabner says it's a huge improvement for poor defendants across the state.
Too many poor defendants who pose a minimal risk of danger, minimal risk of flight, sit in jail for too long pretrial because they can't make even modest amounts of bail. And in the course of doing so, many of them lose access to families, to medication, may lose their jobs.
Now it's bail bondsmen who may lose their jobs. There are about 740 bail bond agents in the state. And another argument they make involves accountability and cost. If a bail bondsman pays bail, the bondsman bears some responsibility for making sure the defendant shows up in court. Antonio Roman is a bondsman in Woodbury in South Jersey, and he's got a tall stack of files on his desk.
All these offenders that I have here that they didn't show up to court, I'm liable to pick these people up. No cost whatsoever to the state.
Roman says he recently spent 3 days in Chicago tracking down a defendant from Camden who missed court.
We spent over $5,000 to $7,000 just to try to find this guy. We didn't bail the state of New Jersey. We didn't bail nobody. We aid the charges at no cost to the taxpayer.
Under the new system, the state will have to track down all the defendants who skip court without the help of bondsmen or bounty hunters. And Roman predicts the state won't have enough resources to find all those people. Then there's the argument that a computer algorithm may not be able to accurately predict whether someone will commit another crime or miss their court date.
Computer messes up all the time.
Olzawi from Clifton calls the reforms garbage and says they're part of a political agenda in New Jersey.
I think it's a very liberal attitude. I think it's anti-law and order, anti-business.
But supporters of the reforms are not very sympathetic to bail bondsmen. Criminal justice advocates say it's really about helping the poor. A 2013 analysis found that nearly 40% of the people in jails across New Jersey were awaiting trial and only there because they couldn't afford bail. Even Roman from Woodbury agrees that poor, very low-level criminals don't deserve to be in jail just because they can't afford bail or court fees. But it's more than that for him. Roman has been running his bail bond business for 10 years. His son works for him. And come January, the service Roman provides is going to be all but useless.
It sucks. You figured I've been doing this for so long that that's what I know what to do. So for me to get a new career, I'm 40 years old. I won't know what to do.
From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
...2016 was a remarkable year in local politics, with voters and prosecutors changing the electoral landscape. Joining us now to wrap up the year and tell us what to expect in 2017 is WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. Dave, we have to start with the presidential race, don't we?
Boy, yeah, you know, Donald Trump may be the story of the century, not just the story of the year. And, you know, here in Pennsylvania, remember, we hadn't voted for a Republican for president in 28 years. And if the Democrats were worried about anything, it was whether their traditional base, particularly voters in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, would turn out, and whether Democrats would continue to perform in the Philadelphia suburbs. And in both cases, they did. The surprise was the huge margins that Trump got in other areas of the state, you know, tapping this anger at the status quo. Having said that, it's important to remember this was a very narrow win for Trump, less than a percentage point, and third-party candidates may have made a difference. You know, Jill Stein, Brad, got 49,000 votes in Pennsylvania. Clinton lost by 44,000.
And how did Republicans do in the rest of the state?
It was a mixed picture. The Republicans strengthened their hold on the state legislature a bit, and they held Pat Toomey's U.S. Senate seat. That was a tough race, bitterly contested and very close, and the most expensive U.S. Senate race ever, by the way. So they did well there, but Democrats swept all three of the state row office contests, just as they did those state Supreme Court elections last year, and that will matter down the line. By the way, two of the winners in 2016, Attorney General-elect Josh Shapiro and State Treasurer-elect Joe Tarsella, are from the suburbs here, and both could eventually be gubernatorial candidates.
So that's Pennsylvania. What about New Jersey in 2016?
Well, I mean, the big story in New Jersey is the big guy, Governor Chris Christie. You know, he begins the year as a legitimate presidential candidate, drops out after New Hampshire, but in the spring becomes a major player in the Trump campaign and potentially in a Trump administration. Then we have that Bridgegate trial, which generated a ton of damaging allegations involving Christie. Now he's nowhere with Trump and nowhere with the voters. The other big story in New Jersey, Brad, of course, is the sad story of Atlantic City, where the collapse of gambling revenues has resulted in what is, in effect, a state takeover with consequences that are still unfolding.
As 2016 draws to a close, we start to look towards the coming year. What can we expect the big stories to be in 2017?
Well, let's stay in New Jersey first. This is a gubernatorial election year in New Jersey. Chris Christie cannot run again. There are quite a number of announced and potential Republican candidates, including the old comedian Joe Piscopo. He's talking about it. The biggest unanswered question maybe is whether Christie's lieutenant governor, Kim Guadagno, will run. It seems likely, but she hasn't committed. The leading Democrat is Phil Murphy, a very wealthy guy with an investment banking background who kind of reminds people in that way of John Corzine, the former governor. But there will be contested primaries in June and a general election in November for governor in New Jersey.
What does the political landscape in Pennsylvania look like in the coming year?
It's a quieter year, but Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams will be up for re-election, and he has some problems on the honesty and integrity front. You'll remember he admitted in August he'd failed to report $160,000 worth of gifts he'd received as required by law. He has three challengers already in the Democratic primary. There may be more. But his bigger problem might be a widely reported federal investigation into his personal and political finances. We don't know whether or if that will lead to any charges, but it is hanging over that race and over Seth Williams' future.
And that's just one of several major corruption investigations involving politicians in the region.
Yeah, they kind of do have a way of affecting things around here, don't they? You know, last year, Attorney General Kathleen Kane was convicted of perjury and conspiracy. Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah was convicted of corruption charges. Both lost their offices. And right now we have the ongoing probes of Seth Williams and the powerful Electricians Union leader John Daugherty. And we should also note that neither former state treasurer Rob McCord or former gubernatorial chief of staff John Estey have been sentenced for offenses they've already admitted to, and that generally means they're still cooperating in ongoing investigations, which will go who knows where. So this should be an interesting year either way.
With all of these shakeups, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's got to be looking ahead towards his next election campaign. When he runs again, what kind of shape's he going to be in?
Well, it's not easy for him. You know, he's accomplished some things, but he faces some very big deficits in the next couple of years. And he's a Democrat facing a legislature that's more Republican than ever. We'll be speaking with him Tuesday on the show here, by the way. And one of the interesting challenges he faces is that some of the Republicans he will eventually run against, like State Senator Scott Wagner, a very conservative guy from York County, are also important players in the legislature with whom he must work to get things done. So While he doesn't face re-election until 2018, how he deals with the state's challenges in the coming year could make or break his chances.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
That's WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. When actress Carrie Fisher died Tuesday, she left a legacy of mental health advocacy. From the Behavioral Health Desk, Anne Hoffman says Fisher's storytelling around recovery has touched many advocates and artists.
In 1987, Carrie Fisher wrote a book called Postcards from the Edge, recounting her experience battling drug addiction. It was later made into a film. Here's part of an early scene from the movie when the main character, played by Meryl Streep, wakes up from a night in the hospital after a drug overdose. She's talking to a woman from the rehabilitation center.
Why did they pump my stomach?
You would have died if they hadn't.
Critics have praised the movie for offering a raw and honest look at the difficulties of early sobriety during a time when stories of its kind were uncommon. Kevin Hines is a mental health advocate and storyteller who feels touched by Fisher's legacy.
She paved the way for all of us advocates to do this work. She was one of the first open and quite loud voices.
Hines also has bipolar disorder like Fisher and survived a suicide attempt when he jumped over the Golden Gate Bridge. His documentary called Suicide, The Ripple Effect will be released next fall. Hines believes that storytelling through film can lead to harm prevention.
If they're done with an effort to not be sensationalistic, to educate, to inspire, and to inform, I think that film can have a transformative effect in helping to change someone's life.
He says he's already seen that his film project has created a sense of community among some who are grappling with mental illness. That sense of community, he believes, can help translate into lives saved. Hines will receive the Lifesaver of the Year Award on January 7th at the Save a Life Gala at the Curtis Center. Anne Hoffman, WHYY News.
The definition of admire is to regard with respect or warm approval. In this week's edition of What Are We Thinking?, Newsworks Tonight's Dave Heller joins Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll, to show respect to a longtime Gallup tradition by digging into who Americans regard with warm approval.
This is the annual Gallup survey on who we most admire.
This is something we've been doing since 1948, and it's a very simple question. It's open-ended. We don't read a list of people. We simply say, what man that you have heard or read about living today in any part of the world do you most admire? And then we say, what woman?
Most admired man. Isn't that typically the sitting president of the United States?
It is, but not always. But this year, it is Barack Obama. He comes in number one. Donald Trump comes in number two behind Barack Obama. And then it's Pope Francis. Bernie Sanders, interestingly, he still has enough fans that enough Americans say they admire him more than anybody else that he's on the list. The Reverend Billy Graham, that's very noteworthy, and we'll come back to that. Then Benjamin Netanyahu from Israel, the Dalai Lama, Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, and the new vice president-to-be, Mike Pence. That rounds out the top 10 list.
So, yes, let's talk more about Billy Graham.
Billy Graham has the distinction of having been in the top 10 more than any other man since Gallup started asking this question back in 1948. It is amazing. 60 times he is on the list. He's still alive. He lives in North Carolina. He's in his 90s. He's an evangelist who started to become famous back in the 1950s, had these huge crusades, as he called them, out in Los Angeles, was on the cover of Life magazine, made the list back in the 50s, and basically for almost every year since.
Is it amazing in part because many who are polled probably don't know anything about Billy Graham?
That's right. We were actually having a discussion in our offices at Gallup the other day about this list, and there was a young millennial in our office who said, "Who is Billy Graham?" So you're absolutely right. A lot of young people don't know who he is.
Next, let's turn to most admired women.
Well, it is Hillary Clinton this year who is the most admired woman anywhere in the country, which is interesting because Hillary Clinton has actually been number one on this list more than any other woman in our history. Not in the top 10, but absolute number one. She started appearing regularly when she was first lady. And for the last 15 years, Hillary Clinton has been at the top of the list. Following Hillary Clinton this year, Michelle Obama, the second most admired person on the list, and then a wide variety of other people with a lot of show business names, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, they're on the list, as well as some other politicians and other famous people, such as Queen Elizabeth.
Does it ever happen that men or women come onto the top 10 list and then are subsequently off it and years later are not remembered much at all?
Yes. Here's a name for you, Sister Elizabeth Kenny. Does that strike a bell, Dave?
No, sir.
Well, it doesn't for most Americans now, but if we go all the way back to 1951, look it up. She was actually a nun, obviously, a Sister Elizabeth Kenny, who at that point had become famous because she had what she thought was a cure for polio. She had clinics and brought lots of people in and had some different things that she did that were thought to be responsible for helping cure polio, which was a tremendous issue at that time back in 1951.
Frank, 2017, what are some of the issues that Gallup will likely be looking into?
I think there's no question, Dave, that more than most instances when we have a newly elected president, the public's reaction to and perceptions of the new president, Donald Trump, will be critical. He's controversial. He's unpopular already. He's doing things. What is the public going to think about this individual after January 20th when he takes office? What about his approval rating? Will it be high? Will it be low? Will Americans think he's doing a good job on the economy? Will there be perceptions that we have major problems internationally with Donald Trump? All of this is going to be fascinating. So I would say by far, we and other public opinion pollsters are really going to be monitoring how Americans are reacting to this extraordinary individual who was elected our president.
So it'll be interesting to see if he tops next year's list of most admired.
We'll see. Typically it is the president, but let's talk again in December 2017, Dave, and we'll have the facts in front of us.
Wishing you and yours a great new year, Frank.
Thank you, Dave. Same to you.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
If you thought Christmas music was over for 2016, Choral Arts Philadelphia has one more performance up its sleeve. The classical choir will perform the entire Bach Christmas Oratorio on New Year's Eve. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports it was made possible by a single generous donor.
The Christmas Oratorio by Johann Sebastian Bach is not heard very often because it's tough to pull off. It was written as six standalone cantatas that were meant to be performed during different religious services over the course of the whole 12 days of Christmas, explains Choral Arts Director Matthew Glandorf.
So that means, practically speaking, that each cantata has a completely different orchestration. You have flutes, for example, for cantatas 1, 2, and 3, and then they disappear. You have horns that appear in cantata 4 and not again.
The logistics of this oratorio are especially difficult for a relatively small organization like Choral Arts Philadelphia Choir, many of whose singers are volunteers. It first performed the oratorio 2 years ago as a gamble, which paid off. One listener back then, who wishes to remain anonymous, said he was, quote, moved to tears, so much so that he donated $10,000 as a matching gift so that Choral Arts and Glandorf could perform it again exactly once on New Year's Eve.
We discovered, to our great joy, 2 years ago, that this, in fact, seemed to fulfill a real need, that it was something outside of the typical holiday sort of nutcrackers and messiahs, and that it was actually kind of a lovely time to get people's attention.
The three-hour concert with nearly 100 performers will pause in the middle for a dinner break. Glandorf scheduled the concert early enough in the evening for people to get to their New Year's Eve parties afterwards. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally tonight, a historically significant house in New Jersey may be getting a second chance. In a letter to the Camden County Historical Society, Congressman Donald Norcross says the state has determined that the Hugh Harrison Glover House in Belmar meets criteria for listing in the New Jersey and National Registers of Historic Places because of its architectural significance and its connection to Revolutionary War militia captain William Henry Harrison, Jr. Thousands of people have pushed to save the building from destruction due to a highway infrastructure project that will reconfigure the Route 42 Interstate 76 Interstate 295 interchange. Norcross wants to explore options that will allow the infrastructure project to continue while preserving the Hugh Harrison Glover House. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. The news director is Eugene Song. John Mussoni is assistant vice president for news operations. Our engineers this week were Audrey Bentham, Diana Martinez, and Adam Staniszewski. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year. I'm Brad Linder for Newsworks Tonight.